Hi, this is Dr. Nathalie Chase Thompson, and I just want to welcome you to Let's Talk Up Close and Personal. I thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be a listening ear. I want to ask you to do one good favor for me. At the end of the broadcast, at the end of the show, I want you to leave a comment. I want to get your feedback. I want to get your thoughts. I want to get your suggestions. This is not all about me, myself, and I. It's about us. So let's talk up close and personal with Dr. Nathalie Chase Thompson. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for telling a friend. Thank you for sharing. Let's get ready and let's talk. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Let's Talk Up Close and Personal. This is Dr. Nathalie Chase Thompson, and today I have a treat. Do y'all see this? We have an actual living, breathing male in our presence. Oh, that is the bomb diggity right there. God is so faithful. You know, I don't know why it is that it's predominantly women. And it's crazy because I have male listeners. We have male listeners, but they won't come from behind the mic, you know, behind the mic, behind the speaker. We want you in the front. So our guest today, Mr. Jamal Maxim, he was bold enough, you know, the champion. So he's the forerunner for all of you other men that's watching and all of you other men that's listening, for you to come out and let us have the conversation. We're just going to talk. So here we go. I met him by way of Facebook in one of our groups, of course, and he responded to a post to invite those that will come on and share their truths, share their passions, share their struggles, share their walk as to what happened, how it happened, transitioning the whole, the entire gamut of the thing. And one of the things that we ask in our questionnaire is, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do. Now, I can read this and it's cool, but as I always do, I normally like my guests to actually share from their own words and not so much from the written paper. Yet, you know, one thing I do see, he started leadership when he was 16. So teenagers that are watching, there is no excuse. There is always hope. There is always something for you to do. But we're not gonna do the mama thing right now. So hello, Jamal, how are you?
Hello, Dr. Nathalie. It's great to be on the show. Great to be here.
Yes, yes, thank you. I'm so glad you accepted the invitation. I'm so glad that you are the forerunner for all the other men that will join us in the future, as well as for our annual Where Are the Men. We're going to send out to some of the men invitations to come so we can just have a real conversation to know who the men are, what their thoughts are, what their hiccups are, what their challenges are dealing with women, with life, with business, with ministry, the whole shebang. Yes. We get deep down into it. And there's no holes barred. Whatever comes up, comes out. It is what it is.
Yeah.
We're not doing and that's that today important. Unless you go that way. And if so, that's the thing. We say we don't discriminate. It's raw, uncut, uncensored, unfiltered. And that's what I love about this platform. So tell us a little bit about you and your journey.
Yeah, well, my name is Jamal Maxim, as you said. But before I share my journey, I just want to jump in on what you said. It's important to have those kind of transparent conversations like you're facilitating, because a lot of times, especially as dudes, sometimes we don't want to share or talk about those things. We want to process them and deal with them ourselves and think we can come up with a solution ourselves because we want to be that provider, be that symbol of strength. But it's important to really be transparent in those conversations, because in transparency, there's opportunities for growth, opportunities to heal. And so I think that's important, and I applaud you for what you're doing to help men stand up and be men, especially in a time where, you know, it's almost not popular to be a man, to be masculine, you know. And so I applaud you for that. That's really awesome. You know, me, I'm an igniter of champions, champion leaders. That's my calling, that's my assignment. And you know, I started, like you said, I was 16 years old when I got my first job and working at a fast food restaurant. And I only went because my friends were working there. You know, I was in high school and I was an entrepreneur at the time. I had a truck. I was cutting 10 or so yards and making good money doing that. And I don't know, but, you know, being a kid, I wanted to do what my friends were doing because they were coming to class talking about how much fun they were having at work and the things that happened. So I wanted to go work with them. And so I went, you know, worked with them, and, you know, after a short period of time became a manager. And so I was in high school managing adults, managing peers, and doing all kinds of things. And that was my first taste of leadership, you know. And from there, I went to business school because I did some stuff in high school that, you know, that I wasn't supposed to. And, lost a few scholarships here and there, and then, you know, wanted to make the responsible decision, because the woman I was, young lady I was dating at the time, got pregnant my senior year in high school, and I wasn't going to be an absentee dad. So I forfeited those scholarships to schools that were out of state so I could be around with my daughter and be in her life. And as a result, so I had to figure out what am I going to do. And I always knew I was supposed to have my own business. So I went to business school, majored in management, you know, got the degree, got out into the business world, started working for this company that primarily did customer service for one of the big three auto companies. And it was a good place to work. It was very interesting dynamic there. Very interesting natural and spiritual dynamic there, but I didn't like it. It seemed dry and boring to me, and it really wasn't feeding that urge in me to bring out the best in others. And so that caused me to shift to education, because I figured, hey, what's the best way to help somebody realize their full potential? Help them learn and grow. So I shifted, went back to school, became an educator, taught for a number of years, for a long time, in a kindergarten through eighth grade setting, which was very interesting, teaching kindergartners, because I didn't think I would like teaching kids that young, because my passion was for junior high age, like those teen and preteens, you know, typical junior high is 6th through 8th grade, because that was a group nobody wanted. Everybody wanted the little kids because they were so sweet, or everybody wanted the older kids because they were like, they're mature, you can do more. Yeah. And so, but I wanted that group that was in that place of trying to find themselves. Cause I was like, if I could find themselves, that would set them up for success the rest of their life. So in this K-8 scenario, I recognize students younger need love too, and they need to find themselves too. So that was great. Did that for a number of years, and then just felt the sense I needed to increase my impact. So went through the process and became school principal. Served as a school principal for a number of years, was known for turning around struggling students, known for serving those families in the what people call a low socioeconomic status, you know, kids with the free and reduced lunch, and, you know, people who are not living affluently. Mm-hmm. Those were the kids that I served and loved on, the parents that I served and loved on. And it was a great experience. And then had to transition out of that to doing what I'm doing now. So,
you know, I'm listening to you. I'm sitting here listening to you. And your life has covered so many bases. Mm. You say you started working when you were 16, but you were already a business owner at that point, just from doing the yards.
Yeah.
So you were not afraid to get your hands dirty. You weren't afraid to do what you had to do the right way to prosper, to grow. Yeah. And I applaud you for that. And then you wanted to follow your friends. Now, let me ask you this. Now, I heard you say that, you know, you did that, and then you were being promoted within. Mm-hmm. Did that put, now, if that was in the same business, did that put you in, what, you know, at a strain or at an odds with your friends that may not have been getting promoted?
Actually, it didn't.
Good.
They were, you know, we were all in high school. They were cool, you know, with what I was doing. They were, you know, because I didn't try to act differently,
okay,
you know, because I had a position. It wasn't like I didn't get into that positional authority type of situation. It's like, hey, listen to me, do what I say. I'm in charge now.
Yeah.
It wasn't that. So because I had relationship before we came, mm-hmm, you know, that relationship, you know, was how I led. You know, I was like, so if I asked them to do something, they did it. Mm-hmm. They've seen my work ethic, so they know I wasn't one of those. And I've never been an office manager, so I never sat in the back while they did the work. So I was always right there with them working, you know, bearing the brunt of the stress, the pressure, the heat, because it would be hot back there in the summertime, you know, in a fast food restaurant, it gets hot, you know, around all those grills and boilers and fryers and stuff. So I'll be back there sweating too, you know, helping unload. Oh, low boxes, doing what needed to be done.
That's good. That's good. So you led by example.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Now, in any of your positions, did you find yourself where you were in a supervisory or managerial spot where you had those that were your seniors and that they may have bucked up against you a little because you were younger?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How did you deal with that?
Well, that I had to learn a hard lesson with that.
Okay.
I've had people buck up against my leadership, especially in a school setting.
Mm-hmm.
And that simply because some of them have been, like you said, they had been teaching longer than I had. They thought they knew more. There were some who didn't want to let go of the previous leader's way of doing things and didn't want to embrace anything new. And there were some who just for just to be honest, I don't know why they bucked up against me. It was just no matter what I did, they just wasn't feeling me. No matter how many encouraging emails I would send, no matter how many breakfasts I was buying the staff, how many thank yous, all the acknowledgements, mm-hmm, doing all the things they say you should do as a leader to win people and to influence them. Some people were just like, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's where I really learned the hard lesson. One, that you cannot jump through. There's a difference between connecting and jumping through hoops at this performance-based leadership where I'm your leader or you're going to follow me as long as I'm doing what you like and what you want and making things comfortable. But then when something shifts or if you don't like something, then all of a sudden you don't want to follow. You don't like me anymore. Because I went through that time period of trying to prove and trying to establish and trying to do all these things. And I recognized I was spending more time jumping through hoops for these folks than actually accomplishing the vision. And sooner or later, some stuff wasn't me. Because, you know, a lot of times, and I see you have John Maxwell's book, and I read and study a lot of his material. Mm-hmm. I read my first John Maxwell book I read when I was 18, Developing the Leader Within You, the original print, you know? And I love John Maxwell's work, but the one thing I have found that's been unique to my journey and my voice and in leadership has been the free will aspect, because you can do all the right things, listen to all the right podcasts, read the books, you can apply the principles, understand you at different levels of influence with different people at different times. You can have that complete understanding, in some kind of way, some people would just not vibe with you. They would choose not to follow you. They would exercise their right to not like you, mm-hmm. no matter what you do. And I had to learn not to take it personal. Absolutely. I had to learn that it wasn't me. I didn't fail as a leader. And I had to learn to stop jumping through hoops. I mean, that it was what it was. And so, yeah, I've had that experience. I've had people, several occasions, do that because my leadership journey wasn't perfect, mm-hmm. especially being known for turning around struggling schools. You're gonna deal with some challenge whenever you are initiating change, you know, because somebody was comfortable with things being at a low standard. Yes. And so when you raise a standard, it creates a level of discomfort. So I've dealt with that. And if you don't have the right emotional state, it uh-huh. can make you question who you are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, my goodness. I love your response, because at that time you were a much younger man, and mm-hmm. understanding even then who you are.
Yeah.
Knowing your value, knowing your self-worth. And, you know, you mentioned John Maxwell. I've been like you, 18, 17, 18, got introduced to him, Zig Ziglar, all, you know, all of them, and started teaching and studying specifically John Maxwell for several years. Now I am a coach and a trainer and a speaker for John Maxwell team certified John Maxwell mm-hmm. Coach and speaker and trainer, in addition to my own mentoring and counseling and coaching organization. That helped me as well, because it was always, for whatever reason, I would end up having to oversee older people.
Yes.
Multiple ethnicities. And I would get some of the craziest pushback from people that I would have never expected it to come from. And not allowing your emotions to dictate you through the process, you can either lose respect of the people, or you can gain an overwhelming momentum of respect from the people based upon how you respond to the situation and circumstance, and or based upon how you respond to that individual. Yeah. You know, we know that most times it's just a spirit, and we have to identify that and not take it personal. But a lot of people don't look at it from that way. A lot of people don't see it that way. So we go through that valley of the shadow of death. Mm-hmm. You know, we go through that valley sometimes to get to some of our mountain highs. And it's cool. It you know, I remember Steve Harvey, and he was saying how, you know, various things had taken place in his life, and he had to be cool with that. And I like that. You got to be cool with that. You're like, okay, it is what it is. It's going to do what it do. You do what
and
you
that's
do.
A process.
I do what I do. And we keep it going.
And that's a process to come to that place of being cool with it. Because, you know,
all right, we are back. You know, right. We are in this zone of modern technology, and technology can fail at times. So we just keep it moving. I call it forward moving. We don't let it stop you. It doesn't throw you sideways. So here we are, and we didn't stop. How about that? All righty then.
So, absolutely.
Okay, we talked about your early age of your, with regards to your first job and your first business and management, things of that nature. Now, one thing I really want to touch on, because you're in the school system, and because you started with the young children and then became the, you know, the teacher, then became the principal. And like you said, through that, and I think it's safe for me to say that if you really have a passion for what you do, if you really enjoy what you do, there is no way that you can be in education of any way, shape, form, or fashion and not have a heart for the children, for those that you're actually there to serve, to grow, to mentor, to help raise up and mold them. But I want to say one thing when you were saying about the babies that you had,
mm-hmm.
which during that time frame, you know, the age and the grading area that you took, you were actually placed there in the formative years, because yes. that's when the children begin to develop a sense of who they want to be, a sense of mm-hmm. how they're going to behave, a sense of, you know, if they're going to have a high self-esteem or a low self-esteem. So I don't, you know, nothing, I would say counted not strange. So yes. it wasn't strange and it wasn't awkward that you were placed there, although your heart was for the middle ages. And I get that, because they're like, you know, they want to say the young adults are like Generation X. No, those 7th, 8th, and 9th graders are like Generation X. You know, as they say, because society, unfortunately, has forgotten about them. They have all sorts of things for elementary students.
Yeah.
Even some middle school. But that 7th, 8th, and 9th grade is like, okay, go for broke. Do what you do. And
right.
And that's sad. But you were there to plant that seed when they were young, and they were able for you to speak into them and to teach them and begin to display. I remember one of our teachers when I was in elementary school, Mr. Adams. This man looked like Frankenstein, because he was so big and tall and scary looking. But he was the nicest man I have ever seen. In elementary school, I'm talking like 1st, 2nd, and 3rd grade. And then there was another one that he was poised and such a gentleman. And I remember those, you know, you remember some of those teachers that had positive impact as well as negative impacts on you. So,
oh, absolutely.
So I applaud you for being that guy, being that conduit to be used, that vessel to be used to draw both the young girls and the young guys into a better place. I applaud you for that. And as a principal though, I had to laugh because I know how it was with me and my mama. As a principal, and some children that only display their parents, their actions.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They only, what you see is really not that child, but it's actually the parent living through that child, because they yes. have, they act out just like who they are. How have you maneuvered through that?
Yeah, one of the things I learned, and I know exactly what you're talking about, that some of the strong will, some of the refusal to listen or follow directions has come from things that were taught to them by the parent, where I've had kids say, my mama said, you're not supposed to talk to me. And I'm like, please, you're in my school. So I got to talk to you just to do my job. Now, if you don't want to talk after I give you this direction, that's fine. But you're going to have to hear directions. So why are you here? So, I mean, that's just the bottom line. And so what I've done is, depending on the parent, because I would try to establish rapport and relationship with parents. And I found that, you know, just being consistent and demonstrating care went a long way with parents. And even some of those parents who would constantly try to buck up against everything I said, mm-hmm. as long as I was consistent, I'm like, look, this is what we do. This is how it is. Now, because as a principal, you're balancing that customer service type of thing of making parents happy with being real about the fact that the parents can't run the school. And so, yeah, I know the child's education is your responsibility as a parent.
And we're here to teach the content for you, basically, and help them grow. But at the same time, you know, my area of expertise is running the school, not yours. So I got to run the school the way that will benefit everybody in this building, not just your one, two, or three children, in some cases, four or five. And so, that was how I would do it. But one of the things I would let kids know is, one, I would never speak ill against anybody's parent, which I had to learn from dealing with my own situation where I never spoke ill of my daughter's mom, regardless of the foolishness she tried. And so I never speak ill of anybody's parents. I never directly contradicted what a parent would say to a child, even if it was wrong. Like a kid would say, my mama said I could walk out of class, or my daddy told me to go punch her if she say something, and that ain't right. Yeah. Like, so if she say something to you, you just gonna go hit her because your daddy said you could. Yeah. And I'm like, but what I would do is try to help them see another way. Mm-hmm. I know that's what your daddy said. And I know you feel like you have permission to hit this student because you're basically irritated with her. But what would be the result of that? Because if you hit her, I have to now give you some type of, there's a result, a consequence to it. Now, I don't believe in just, straight punishment. You did this, boom. But I don't also believe in being too soft either, because I think in school, we've gone from one extreme to the next. We've gone from suspending kids for everything to suspending them for nothing. Yeah. And so it's like there's a time and a place for out of school consequences when you need to remove that behavior from the environment to reset it. And then there are times when, no, you're not getting off that easy. You're not going to be at home playing on the Xbox while your parents at work. We're going to have you right up in here and make you face this thing. And so I would just really reason with them, like, look, because there's a result. So yeah. if you do this action, then first the kid is going to respond. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they're going to just stand there. And then two, I'm going to have to respond as the adult. So there will have to be something unpleasant that you will have to experience. And then we will have to do more teaching and talking to help you understand that there's a better way.
Yes.
Because the bottom line is you can't act that way here, because when you become an adult and act that way, it will be no mercy on the consequences for you. And so I'm trying to save you now. And so that's kind of what I do when I talk to them, and I would try to be real with them, and I would never try to contradict, what the parents said, but I will offer them a better way and try to convince them to choose that better way.
Now, one other question that we're going to move from this altogether. You being a young father,
mm-hmm.
understanding some of the struggles that comes along with that, and then now you're teaching, and now you're a principal, and you seeing that on a regular.
Yeah.
Sad to say, but true. You're seeing that on a regular happening in the school. And sometimes the students having to drop out because the young girl or the guy having to drop out of school because of the pregnancy. How did that help you? How did what you had to go through help you? And how did it help you to help the students cope with life still being able to be productive in the midst of it? Or were you even ever in a spot where you would actually have conversations with the students on a group level, or with the parents, or anything of that nature?
Well, I was, most of my career, I was in that K-6 setting. And so my last years when I was able to be with high school students.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't have too many opportunities to really talk to them about that, mm-hmm. Which was okay. I mean, there were a few that would talk to me about how they were hanging out and, they would slip in front of their friends, or they would get too comfortable and talk about what they were doing, you know. And I'm like, look, you know, I would just advise them against it. I would say, look, this is the kind of conversation you need to have with your parents. Mm-hmm. I was like, but however, I'm gonna just tell you, I'm not trying to sound like some old guy, mm-hmm. but I'm gonna tell you not to do it.
Yes.
Here's why.
Gotcha.
And I would just tell them, you know, because everything changes. Because it only takes one moment for somebody to get pregnant, and then everything changes then. And so whatever path you thought you were gonna take, now you have to consider someone, another life, and how to provide for that child financially. And you have to deal with the attitudes, adjustments, changes, mental and emotional changes of that person's family. So, and it's like, if this ain't somebody that you thinking you're gonna spend the rest of your life with, think about that too, because they're gonna be attached to you forever.
Yes.
And so if you're thinking, nah, this was just somebody else, no. And so I really advise them against it, because I talk about how those short-term pleasures or short-term lack of control can impact your destiny and put it on a trajectory, or cause you to have detours or challenges that you don't need. And so, you know, I've had opportunity just to share that part briefly, mm-hmm. and like drop it as a seed, but really nothing in detail. Because a lot of times people talk about abstinence and things like that without really giving them practical strategies on how to do that. Mm-hmm. Because we all have hormones, and you have to be mature to ignore them.
Yeah.
And when you're a kid, you don't have that maturity to ignore them. And plus, they're developing, so they're like on level 10.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do you handle being hormonal, mm-hmm. when there's a culture that says, oh, tell them abstinence, but give them a condom. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or put them on birth control.
Yeah.
It's like, no, there's more that happens in that exchange than the potential to catch a STD or make a baby.
Yes.
There's an emotional thing that happens that should not happen while you are still trying to develop and know yourself.
Come on.
And so I talk about that, because I'm like, see, that's why, you know, you'll argue with this dude and make a scene in class, and then be in the office crying, talking about you love him, but you just called him a punk and a B word and everything else in class and embarrassed him and tried to have your friend, you know, sneak and video it so it could be on Snapchat later, but all of a sudden you love him, you know, or that kind of thing. Yeah. And so it's like, why put yourself through that?
Yeah.
And so, you know, so those are that's what I share in seed form.
Okay.
But I always encourage them to talk to their parents so they can have those detailed, in-depth conversations.
Wow.
Because sometimes you want to go as detailed, but you really can't because of the position.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much. It is so refreshing to hear a man's point of view, a man's perspective from a male's walk through life, a male's walk through challenges, or, you know, obstacles or hills and valleys. It is so refreshing. I talk to women all the time. I talk to a lot of guys too, but not with regards to, you know, coming on and being willing to open. So before we go any further, we're gonna take a station identification, and we'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Nathalie Chase Thompson, and I want to share with you very briefly a matter of the heart. One of our nonprofit 501c3 organizations is Op Faith, Operation Faith Transition, Transportation, and Redevelopment Program. We support veterans, offenders, ex-offenders, homeless, those that go through abuse, teens aging out of foster care, single parents, and their families. And we need your help. During this pandemic, we have lost over 65% of our donor base. And again, like I said, we need your help. We help people as housing is concerned. We help pay their utilities, their rent, find housing, put them through trainings, various aspects, feed families. And although we're based out of Jacksonville, we service nationwide. So if you will find it in your heart, go to opfaith.org. That's opfaith.org. We ask that you consider to donate. Your donations can never be too large, and they can never be too small. So help us help each other. Help us help the next family. It's called paying it forward. Blessings, and we're looking forward to seeing you along the way. Welcome back as we come to the conclusion of the matter. So let's continue and let's talk.
All right, and we are back with my special guest, Jamal Maxim. I am so grateful, like I said from the very beginning, to have the opportunity to speak with this young man. And then hearing his life, you know, you have to go back to the beginning if you're just jumping in, you're just tuning in, it is what it is, but he has so much wisdom and so many nuggets that both young and old can draw from what he's already shared. You can hear how he articulates his life walk, his life journey. But even during that, you can hear how he painted the picture so you could go on that journey along with him. So I thank you again, Jamal, for being here. Mr. Jamal Maxim, I thank you so much for being here with me. And looking forward to this part of the show to hear more about what you've done since you've come out of the educational realm and gone into business for yourself. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, that journey, and I know we were speaking earlier, right before the audio issue, about how you have to be okay with, you know, the challenges and the negative things that happen. Mm-hmm. And my transition was just that, you know, it put me in a place where I had to learn to be okay with outcomes that I didn't like.
Yeah.
And I had to recognize that those outcomes did not, let me say it this way. That me not seeing the outcome that I wanted, mm-hmm. I couldn't let that change my confidence in myself, my faith in God, my faith in myself, or question my destiny. And so that's a tough place because, you know, as I said earlier, I was known for turning around struggling schools. I was a principal of a school and I had about 100 teachers. I mean, the school was large. And at the beginning of this particular school year, I took some time the previous year to really assess some things and ask some questions and get answers and get people to start dialoguing and giving opinion. Mm-hmm. So this was a year I casted a greater sense of vision, because the dynamic of this particular school was, it was a top school in the district at the time. Most of that work was laid by my predecessor, which, you know, we had an instant connection because things she was doing in that building, I was doing at a different school. So when I came to the district for that 1 year, there was an instant connection, you know, the 1 year we had the honor to work together and we're still friends today. And then when she relocated, I assumed leadership over the entire school and we kept it moving. But this year I laid out vision. You know, because there was a sense of giving students a false sense of success with how grades were calculated and how grades were given. And so we were adjusting. And there was this feeling of we're the best. because we were better. The school was better than everybody else in the district, okay. Which is okay to be confident in who you are. But at the same time, if we're better than the district, fine. But if the students are not where they're supposed to be according to the state, we have work to do.
Yes.
And so instead of pushing, they wanted to coast. And so I was like, no, we got to keep pushing. And we got to push with a sense of urgency, because every year a kid, we don't close a gap, we widen the gap.
Absolutely.
And so this was a year where I cast a vision and was pushing, and I immediately met some resistance. Mm-hmm. Not from all of them, but from the small group that made noise. And so as a result, you know, I was treated unfairly because, you know, when you're dealing with unions, even if the representative doesn't agree, they have to still follow the direction of the person. And so this small group, you know, kept trying to come at me, and they were even trying to get personal in the sense of trying to start rumors and say that I was out cheating on my wife. And I'm like, really? When? You know, they had this rumor, oh, last weekend he was out at the restaurant with this other woman. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, check Instagram. Cause my wife was posting selfies of us at the place where we were. and so it was that kind of thing where they were trying anything they could to come up against me. And the way that dynamic worked is because they had friendships, personal friendships with school board members. So, and who were in the majority at the time.
Okay.
So 3 out of the 5 school board members were a little clique, and they were friends with, had personal friendships and relationships and everything else with these particular people who were pushing, giving me pushback, all because I was challenging them to do better for the kids. And I mean, things that they would accept from others, they didn't want to accept from me. And so that was where I was saying, I learned how to stop jumping through hoops, because for whatever reason, some people would just not like you. Even when you're doing all the right things, I was buying the breakfasts. I was, after observing a class, I would send an email back and tell them what I saw that was really great. But then I would also leave one area of growth. And so, I mean, I was doing all those things, showing appreciation out there in the thick of stuff. I've never sat in my office as a principal ever. And so, but they were still doing those things. And so it got so intense from that small pocket that I actually switched positions. And this is like a month into it. So I get asked to work on a special assignment. They said, hey, we know things are challenging for you right now. We see how you're good with strategy. You're good at, you know, implementing stuff, good at helping people grow. We need you to go to this other school. Because the other school, the high school at the time, they had a principal turnover every school year.
Wow.
Except for that year. So for the past 10 years, after every year, the principal was like, I'm out. I'm not taking this no more. And so except for that year. So the guy from, this was the first time a guy came back. But he needed support in adding structure and implementing things to change culture. So they said, look, this would be good for you. It'll be good for this building because it's already operating pretty much okay. It'll just get you out the situation. Mm-hmm. I didn't really want to do that, but you know, you get voluntold to do stuff. You know, as a principal, you're not unionized. You can't really object. Your contract says they can send you wherever, whenever. Mm-hmm. So boom, I'm in this new assignment. Now, the first thing I had to learn was first, before I even got to the high school, I was at district office working on stuff. And because of my efficiency, I'm finishing work that's supposed to take a whole day in a couple hours. So I'm like, and then I saw no one, but that's the thing. It was like, I was isolated. So I go through this period where I have hours during the day in isolation. And it almost felt like a punishment. I felt like a kid on punishment because the room I was working out of was super small. Like almost like somebody's walk-in closet, you know what I'm saying? And it felt like a punishment.
Yeah, and I was time out.
Yeah, like I'm in timeout. And so, but during that time, I had to learn how to deal with feeling lonely, feeling isolated, feeling rejected. And at the same time, I started getting this sense of, I need to focus on my business, that I was being called to do something greater. And I started looking at my business, and that's when I realized I really didn't have a business, because I was just posting motivational stuff and doing a workshop here and there, but I really didn't have a business. I really didn't help people systematically. I didn't have anything that says, look, this is what I do and I can walk you through this process. So I started really developing it. And then I was like, okay, God, I need somebody who can help me, you know, really get to where I need to be. Uh-huh. So then during that time, I found a business coach. And I, you know, I did my research. I didn't just jump on the first one who said they could promise whatever. I did my research to figure out who I could work with, followed them for a while, got to kind of know them a little bit, and then signed up for one of their programs while I'm in this period of isolation.
Yes.
So I made sure I was faithful in doing what I was asked. And then when I had nothing else to do and they had nothing else to give me to do, I started working on this assignment on the side. Then after like 2 months of that, they say, hey, okay, we're ready for you to go to the high school. They send me to the high school. So of course now my focus is on doing that. But I wasn't doing what a principal would do. They were like, I was in more meetings than I can count. So I was either in a meeting or a meeting with somebody about a meeting or debriefing about a meeting or something like that. And so I was doing more meetings, more basically consulting, because I'm like making recommendations to the principal, you know, talking to vendors to help them, you know, implement programs, things like that. And so that was what I was doing mostly. And it was working because we got to initiate a lot of good things that was making transformation. So that's happening. And then at home, I would leave. So being on high school hours, you know, I'm dipping at 2:30.
Yeah.
And because I wasn't doing the normal principal functions, I didn't have to stay for any meetings after school like I would normally have to, didn't have to do none of that. So I was like, all right, cool. I'm out. It's 2:30. I'm out. So after that, I would spend that time continuing to work and build. Fast forward to January of last year, they come to me and say, hey, high school team loves you. You're doing great. Do you want to stay here or go back to the elementary school, you know, next year? You can do either one, but we recommend you stay here. Because while you were gone, and see, that was a lesson too. They were like, while you were gone, that environment isn't really that great now. You would have to work harder to get your influence back because the little stuff was left unchecked. Because the person who was running the school while I was gone didn't check it, because his leadership style was very different than mine. And so he basically pacified him, just to be honest. And so that thing was, those seeds were able to grow, which created a more hostile environment. And so I was like, okay, let me think about it. Because for me, I'm a fighter. I'm like, look, I can win anybody. I love on anybody and I'll wear them down. And so I'm like, but let me think about what my assignment should be. That was January. Come February, this House bill passes in the state, which had been debated for a year, which I advocated against. Other superintendents advocated, other principals advocated, districts advocated against it. And they were trying to help things for the charter school movement, which I've been on both sides of that coin. So I understand the need for funding for charter schools. But, you know, at that time, they were talking about as a solution, which really wasn't a solution. They wanted to take money from public to the charter. And I was like, that's not helping. You know, so you're going to cause a problem in one category of schools to help another versus coming up with another income source. So that bill passed, unfortunately. So February of last year, they come back to me and say, look, you know, the bill passed and nobody likes it. Nobody was cool with it. I'm like, right. And then they say, we're going to lose so many millions out of our budget. And I'm like, wow, what are we going to do? They say, well, we have to make cuts.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. Now, when a finance person makes cuts, they don't look at your perfect record. They don't look at, oh, these evaluations have been great all this time. They don't look at the transformation you've done in the school system or how you built upon transformation that already occurred. They don't look at that. Finance people look purely at numbers. They say, if I cut this number, it'll put me here. But if I don't cut this number, I will have to cut a couple of numbers here, which is the flip side of performing well when people give you increase for your performance, because we all want raises and things like that because you're doing well. But when you get to a certain point, you can also be the first one cut.
Yeah.
If they feel like they can get around you not being there, because they say, I could cut one person or two. And so it's purely a numbers game. So they did the numbers game. I was one of the individuals that was cut. That was February. And then come March, the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And so, and because the cuts were across the state, I had to, there was really nowhere I could apply because every district in the area was making cuts at the time because of the statewide thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was, so I felt like something was up. And I'm just being honest. I was like, what up, God? What's up?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I was treated unfairly. You know, and I believe in justice and recompense and all of these things, you know, making things work for my good. And I firmly believe you have to declare and speak faith-filled words. That's what, you know, that's what we teach. And I firmly believe that. So I was doing all of those things. And I, you know, and I had a good worship playlist on too to keep myself from feeling lonely. I think that year was the first year I was able to watch the day and evening sessions of a particular pastor's conference. I was like, well, I'm gonna just watch everybody because I'm done with my work. So it's, okay. He's just gonna be on preaching and it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I saw some of those board members that were helping cause issue get removed because by the grace of God, there was a board meeting where a reporter was there and nobody knew. And he observed how they were missed because I wasn't the only one being mistreated. They mistreated the superintendent, the assistant superintendent, and any other principal that was of color. And so this reporter was there. Nobody knew. Reporter interviewed people afterwards, released the story the day before board elections. Those people got removed. So I'm thinking, yes, justice. But my position got eliminated.
Okay.
And so that made me, and I'm wondering like, what's going on? I'm seeing justice. I'm seeing progress. Yes. Things are shifting and going the way that I was believing for, but I still didn't get the desired outcome.
Yeah.
And so at that point in time, I was like, okay. So I had to sit back and say, God, what are you requiring of me in light of what I now know? Because just being real, it was like, I can't really question God. I know that I know he didn't cause it, but what is the purpose of him allowing it?
Mm-hmm.
Because the scripture says that there'll be a far more exceedingly eternal weight of glory. So what is the glory you're going to get out of this situation that's greater than if you would have restored me to my position?
Yeah.
And so I sat back and asked that question because it's real. So I'm like, okay, my salary that was coming twice a month is going to end at the end of the summer because, you know, I had to finish out my contract. You know, I got to provide, you know, for my family. You know, I'm like, what's up? And so it was during that time where I learned the same, and because people really want to hire, I was like, the same effort to get my resume in front of people, to convince them to hire me, is the exact same faith and effort to present my program to people and say, let's get a contract together.
Yes.
And let me help you go to the next level by using the skills I was using in the school system anyway, building leaders, putting processes in place, helping people birth their vision. That's what I was doing as a principal anyway. And so I realized God is shifting something. And so I had to be okay with how that thing was coming versus being stuck on, you said I'm supposed to get justice. Where's my justice?
Yeah.
You know, they're talking about me, they're bad mouthing me. My reputation, you know, is not as great with that group of people as it was at first. Cause when I first came, they were like, oh, thank God you're here. We're so glad you're here. Don't leave. Don't go nowhere else. Don't leave to go to another district. People are saying you're performing so well, you're just gonna leave. I mean, it went from that to, you know, it got to the point that even the people I had relationship with stopped speaking to me and stopped really, and kind of looked at me funny. It was like, whoa.
But doesn't that sound familiar?
Yeah.
I mean, like, the servant is no greater than the master, right?
Absolutely.
Yes. They celebrated him in the beginning and then turned around and say, crucify him a few days later. Go figure.
Yes. So it was exactly that. And the thing I had to learn too, it wasn't just from the people who were obvious enemies. Mm-hmm. It were people allowed either the pressure to, because sometimes, well, I would just say that environment, the way the union was ran, it caused them to have a clique attitude where it's like, I don't agree, but I have to support my teammate. Yeah. And there was this us against them environment that had already been created before I got there. And when I came with reconciliation. I'm like, who's the them that we're against? You know, I'm like, who they at? Where they at? Who are they? You know, and so I was always talking about reconciliation and, you know, nobody's out to get you. I was like, no administrator is the boogeyman. Nobody's waiting to jump out. I'm like, ah, I caught you slipping, you know, so I was always had that message anyway, but people who were close to me, who I thought were supporting me, who I thought had bought into the vision, they either out of pressure or it was really in their heart, it was like they ignored me. But at the same time, there were people who didn't care. It was like, look, whatever. They would text me and say, look, I'm praying for you. There were some that say, look, I don't even know what's going on, but I'm praying for you. I miss you over here at the school. You know, so it was some of that as well. So I can't just dwell on the negative part, because one of the things I realized, I really identify with what Jesus went through with Judas, because I had a member on my leadership team, well, actually two of them on my leadership team, be the ones to try to speak up against me, even though they didn't even agree with what was being said about me. They just kind of echoed it. And so it was hurtful. It was a time where I was like, okay, where's my justice? What do I do now? Because I'm thinking about financially taking care of my family. I was thinking about all the effort and faith and work that I put into getting to this position. I'm like, now it looks like people are trying to take it away from me. You know, it was all of those feelings I had to process. But then when I took the time to be, you know, it's something about being intentional about being alone with God, but it's also something about the length of time you're alone with God, because I've already had a discipline, but I had to like, no, I wouldn't, my time, my current level didn't give me the peace, the answers I needed. So I was like, look, we gonna stay here until I get these answers. And so that really helped me to be okay with the things that went down, because I recognized my assignment was changing. And I remember asking God recently, well, why didn't you just tell me this would be your last year and I want you to start your business full time? But I recognized after asking that question, I got an answer, you know, because Holy Spirit will talk to you. He'll answer the question. I mean, you ask him a question, he gonna answer. So he was like, because the lessons you learned, the way you left, you can use to help somebody else. Because now I know more about, most of my leadership material talks about being focused, not jumping through hoops. What do you do when people exercise free will? Most of that came from that experience, lessons I've learned from that experience. And my capacity to understand that sometimes the vision that we get doesn't unfold the way we picture it.
Yes.
And to have patience and faith in that, I've learned that from that lesson. Yeah. Now, God can teach me anything without going through stuff, but at the same time going through increased my capacity to be able to share that with somebody else.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's volumes. Yes. Being able to be transparent, being able to forgive, being able to forgive quickly, being able to maintain your peace and your sanity, being able to stand against the turbulence that's being thrown at you and you're being thrust into the middle of it, being able to maintain your integrity, your ethics and your morals, even when you know the railing accusations and the plan of the enemy was set out to destroy you, but you're still standing. So all of these things come. And I'm saying this because a lot of people look at men, be it young or old, and have the misconception that, oh, they good. Oh, nothing doesn't bother them. Oh, they can handle it. You know, he a man. He should be able to handle it. He a man. But you're a human being with feelings and emotions, and life happens to you. And like you said, you losing your job after all the great accolades to find out that you were crawled, you were crossed. Now finding yourself, what am I going to do? How am I going to care for my family? Yeah. So looking back and, you know, as the hindsight is 2020, looking back and realizing that all throughout this whole situation and your map, your life map, God was actually giving you a literal boot camp as to what you were going to be doing and to get you graduated out of boot camp, get, you know, master sergeant, lieutenant, all these other things in order to position you for your own business, for your own business to now give back some of the very things that you've learned through your life lessons, to give back, to mentor, to teach, to encourage, to direct, to guide. And I remember you were saying how you were wondering, you know, okay, what does this have to do with this? What does this have to do? And we don't even realize. I think about the Karate Kid, wax on, wax off. Damn. Yeah. Wax on, wax off, you know, cleaning all the cars and all of this. What does that have to do with me being able to fight? I'm giving you the tools. Yeah. I'm teaching, you know, you were being taught the tools and you were gaining more tools to put in your toolbox to prepare you for your destiny.
Yes.
Not even real, you know, and that's what I want the audience to understand. And you notice with him, I didn't butt in. I didn't jump in as often as I would, because sometimes we don't allow men to have the freedom to speak without wanting to finish their sentence for them or to finish their statement for them. So I wanted to just be quiet, just be still and be quiet to hear what you had to say. And hoping and praying and knowing that this is helping so many other people. No, we haven't, you know, April is our month of being champions. And April is our month of, you know, telling our truth. Well, he is telling his truth. Although that we're not talking about abuse and we are, because some people abuse their authority to manipulate him, to get him out of his position. So that was still another form of abuse. You know, being the verbal abuse, the attacks that he found himself being thrown at him. So that's still abuse, in case you were wondering, being mishandled, you know, taken advantage of, because this is what we have to go through. But the beautiful part about it all is when you were over at the other school, and I know this might not sound nice, but it's the truth. You were over at the other school and able to look back to where you came from that was supposed to be all grand, all beautiful, all, you know, a well-oiled machine, and seeing that the very weapon that they formed, it didn't prosper.
Right.
But at the same time, you didn't glow.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't about the staff. The children were the ones that were suffering. So we're gonna skip a little bit because of the time. But do you see yourself as being a champion? Because we were saying on the break, how I've noticed so many people will buck up against help, but they don't realize they need that champion. They need somebody to be in their corner. And sometimes you have to be that champion from a distance. So do you see yourself as being that champion?
Absolutely, because I understand that you can't be a champion without engaging in battle. I mean, who do you know has a championship without engaging in some kind of battle, without dealing with some kind of pressure and preparation to win? So I definitely know and see myself as a champion, but I also recognize that I'm called to ignite other champions, because a lot of people don't. Some people may have taken that same situation I've gone through personally and doubted themselves, or would have bent to the will of others and tried to apologize for things they didn't do wrong, you know, just to try to see if they could get their position or beg to have their position saved. You know, I didn't do all of that because I recognized I'm in covenant with God. And if he directed me to do anything, or when he did, I did it. But when he didn't, I didn't. And I had to understand that because of the covenant I have with him, that I can trust in his covenant and recognize, you know, it's one thing to say God is my source. It's another thing to say God is my only source.
Come on now.
Because God was my source when I was in the school and getting my paychecks, but I knew 15th and 30th, boom, direct deposit.
Yeah.
So I knew, but that's different from believing God for the direct deposit, knowing that they may not come on the 15th and 20th. They may come on different days, or they might not come at all that month. But can you still trust God and trust in his covenant in a way that you don't get concerned about finances? So that's a different level of walking with God, because it's a walk by faith, not just a step of faith, meaning every day there should be steps of faith. And so that took me to a new place. But a lot of people sometimes don't get to that place because they get overwhelmed by the feeling, and really just this feeling of darkness that would try to come on them when they deal with opposition, especially as a man. When you start dealing with opposition and it's like you've done all the right things, but people are painting you to be something that you're not, this feeling of darkness will try to come on you, this feeling of failure. And, you know, the kind of things that people can say about a man that, you know, that can just go there, that is like, okay, you don't even have an opportunity to defend yourself. You know, they say, oh, he out with another woman. People automatically believe it because of this thing of that men cheat. But the good thing is there were a lot of people that didn't believe it because they were like, yeah, right, that's not Jamal. But people come with those typical things that men have been stereotyped with as a way to defame their character, to try to assassinate their character, to kill their influence. And so if some people, depending on where you are, you might not, it's hard to get out of that.
Yeah.
And that's why I like to ignite people, because I'm like, look, I'm going to help you birth your vision. I'm going to help you put stuff in place. I'm gonna help you lead. I'm gonna help you develop your team, how to lead. And I'm gonna help you walk this thing out like you're supposed to with joy. Instead of coming out battered and bruised and scarred, you're gonna come out this fire with no smell of smoke.
Wow.
And so that's really more of, I see myself as a champion. I know it because I have the DNA of a champion in me because Christ is in me, the hope of glory. But I see myself as an igniter more than anything.
Oh, wow. Bam. It's like, okay. Now we can do the benediction and the dismissal and we're good to go. Okay. I guess you heard that, right? Yes, he is a champion in every sense of the word. Yes, he knows who he is. He knows his value. He knows his worth. He knows his abilities. He knows the ups and the downs of who he is. And that speaks volumes. Yes, yes, and yes again. I can't even come behind that. I can't think of anything to come behind that with. And that's good. That's good because just like your tagline, as you know, if you had a tagline, to lead like a champion.
Yes.
To lead like a champion. And the only way that you can lead somebody is that you have to know where you're going. Yeah. Because if you don't know where you're going, how can you lead somebody else? And how can you teach others how to follow their destiny if you never followed your own? Lead like a champion and you're leading by example. So I thank you so much. Would you tell the people how they can find you, how they can get in touch with you, you know, how they reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. People can go to my website, jamalmaxim.org, learn all about me, learn about what I'm doing. They can book a time with me on my calendar. My email is there. My phone number is there. You know, and anybody, any of the listeners or viewers of this podcast, they can get a free 30-minute session with me just for me to hear what's going on with them and try to help them. And so, I'm everywhere.
Thank you so much. And you heard that. And this is when you know someone is confident. He is offering a free 30-minute consultation with him because he knows who he is. And he's comfortable in his own skin and in his own zone, in his lane. He's flowing in his lane right where his assignment is for this season, for such a time as this, to reach a people such as we are. So I thank you, Jamal Maxim, for being my guest today. I thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to come and just have this conversation, just to chop it up a few minutes. And I'm really hoping that when we send you the information for Where Are the Men, that you will be a part of our platform because it's going to be very diversified. And like I said at the beginning, the conversation is going to take on its own identity. But we need to hear the man's voice. We need to hear what's on the heart of the man. We need to hear what struggles that they're having, where we as a family, we as women, we as daughters, wives, whatever, can come and rally behind and lift their arms up and support them and to push them and to encourage them. But also to learn how to be comfortable in our skin while they're operating in their own.
Yes.
So thank you again so much. I appreciate you. I'm looking forward to seeing things that are going on in your world, in your lane. So again, he said, reach out to his website. It's JAMALMAX as an x-ray, SAM.org. Again, that's JAMALMAXSAM.org. Well, Jamal, thank you. We've come to the end of our segment for today. I pray as always that you are blessed, you stay safe, and you be well. Again, this is Dr. Nathalie Chase Thompson with another segment of Let's Talk Up Close and Personal. Cool. Cool.